Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Today, we're in for a treat, guys. We have a returning guest, John Toms, joining us. John, thank you so much for coming back on.
Returning guest. I know I got the call back.
You got the call back. I think you're now a bit of a series regular.
I know, is this the second time or the third time? I was thinking that. Is it the
third time?
Third time. Quite a returning guest.
Yes, I know. You're such a fan favorite. I look at my stats and you are one of the most popular ones that everyone loves to listen to. So
it's a treat to be
so
back.
Excited.
Thanks for having me again.
Yes. So good to have you. And you're based in London, right? You're in London.
I'm based in London. Yeah, it's wild that we can do this, isn't it? I'm in London. You're over the complete other side. It's crazy. So yeah.
I know. It's crazy. Yeah, we, and those of you that are just catching on, we met in ministry school in Redding, California, over 10 years ago. It's crazy to think.
Wild. 10 years.
Yes, 10 years. But anyway, so I wanted to get John on today because he talks about emotional health so well. And I think it's so fun to kind of bridge cultures, especially coming from Australian, the UK, but then we've lived in America. And so it's really fun to kind of talk about this topic because I've noticed it's even if like this topic is so received differently in different cultures. I know that's sort of been my experience, but we're going to be talking about vulnerability today. And it's probably, there can be a lot of like cringe or discomfort maybe around the topic of vulnerability. But we wanted to kind of give just more language to what vulnerability is and the power of it. And I'm kicking off this season with the Wholehearted series, talking about living wholehearted and being wholehearted is so, like, one of the ingredients to being wholehearted is actually engaging with vulnerability. So, John, I will start by sharing the one that really gave language to vulnerability, and that's Dr. Brené Brown. She says, we love Brené. Her quote is, vulnerability is the birthplace of love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, and creativity. And I love that quote because it takes courage to be vulnerable. So we're going to talk about that today. I think a lot of people can have this idea that vulnerability is weakness. So we want to debunk that. But I'll hand it over to you. How would you define vulnerability, John?
Yeah, I know. Brené Brown, she's just brilliant, isn't she? She has put a lot of language, a lot of words to, maybe words we don't understand. She's put other words to help us unpack, understand, kind of dive into words. And vulnerability is such a big one, isn't it? It's funny, that quote, I'm looking at all the other words after vulnerability. I'm like, oh, love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, all such nice words. And then vulnerability is at the start and you're like, oh, I know I have to go through vulnerability to access love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, and creativity. So it's really funny. Even my relationship with it, I say I love vulnerability, but even coming on and talking about it now, I'm like, oh, it's just uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. It's emotional exposure.
It is.
It's uncertain. It's risky. You don't quite know what the outcome's going to be. Vulnerability, it's exposing. It's really... vulnerable, as the word says, it's like the perfect word for it. It's the ability to be wounded, basically, and to be exposed in front of people. It's a big one. It's a big word.
It's a big one, and I think that I know for me, I've been teaching this topic for 8 years, and I still try and outsmart it. It's not like, the more you understand the teaching of vulnerability, the better at it you become. Yeah. like it's almost like, oh, I can feel myself resisting being vulnerable.
Well, I think that's what Brené did, wasn't it? Wasn't she a shame researcher? Wasn't she? She described herself in the early days of her teaching. I think she was actually trying to prove that you don't need vulnerability, and proved otherwise, basically, and proved you absolutely do need it. So it's quite funny. I think all of us that do engage with it wish we didn't have to be quite honest.
I know. Yes, it's so true. A lot of people can think, I know for me, having a podcast where I talk about pretty openly about my life, and having, you know, taught and like kind of sharing some of my stories, sometimes I'm like, some people might think it's vulnerable, but to me it's not vulnerable. Yes. It's more transparent. Yeah. So could you define the difference between being transparent versus being vulnerable?
Yeah, that's a good it's a good place to start, actually, because I think often we can think we're being vulnerable and we're not, we're being transparent. I mean, transparent, I guess it's allowing someone to see information of your life or facts of your life, or you're basically communicating, look, this is who I am, this is what's going on inside. It's more factual, whereas vulnerability is more sharing emotion, feelings, your personal truth, things that you really stand for, values. Whereas, yeah, transparency, I guess it's like transparency is looking through the window. Vulnerability is inviting someone in to the other side of the window, basically. So you would let someone look through your lounge window, maybe, but you'd allow someone else to come into your actual lounge and sit down on the couch. You're kind of allowing yourself to be affected by someone else, because vulnerability would involve needs, and it would involve allowing someone to actually affect you and potentially wound you. It doesn't always go well, right? So it's actually a bit of a risk. You're allowing someone to actually affect you, but they could affect you in a positive way or a negative way. Whereas transparency, you're just kind of letting them have a peek without actually expressing a need. So it gets vulnerable when you're actually saying, I need this from you, like what I'm processing with you, what I'm sharing with you. I actually need you to meet me there. I need you to move towards me. I need you to move towards me with compassion, empathy. Whereas transparency doesn't really require that. So I think that's the difference between the two. So yeah, transparency, looking through the window, vulnerability, coming on in, sitting on the couch, having a cup of tea.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's such a good analogy. And I think it's helpful to kick it off with a story or like your journey with vulnerability, like, because I think it's really powerful, like when people share their stories, it helps other people kind of identify like, oh, I relate to that. And that you know, helps me make sense of what you're saying. And so for you, what's been your relationship with vulnerability?
Well, I think it's the awareness of need, basically. So I think vulnerability forces you into community and need with other people. So I think for me, it was the realization of, I can't do this life alone. I don't think I'm supposed to do this life alone. And I really believe that I wasn't supposed to do this life alone. So I believe we were created absolutely for connection. I would believe we were created to actually experience like emotional intimacy with each other. You cannot have that intimacy without vulnerability. It's the bridge to intimacy. Vulnerability is the bridge to intimacy. So I think for me, it was an awareness of, this is actually a must. If I want to do relationship, if I want to have a wholehearted life, if I want to have a connected life, then I actually have to do this vulnerability piece. So I think it was an awareness of, I can't really do this life alone, don't want to. And there's this big word called vulnerability that I've got to now learn and then access and outwork in order to actually get to the other side. Like all those words we saw at the start, love, joy, belonging, courage, all those things come off of the back of vulnerability. So I think for me, it was the realization of, oh, I've actually been created for vulnerability, or created for intimacy, sorry. I've been created for intimacy, but it requires vulnerability to get there. So I think that was the realization, but the actual journey with vulnerability was like a bit more messy, a bit more up and down, a bit more, how do I do this then? Do I want emotional intimacy with everyone? Should I have emotional intimacy with everyone? Does everyone get my vulnerability? And that's been a bit of a bigger journey, which I'm sure we'll get into as well.
Yeah. I love that you're talking, because I think that sometimes from counseling and working with students or clients or whatever, there can almost be this thing of like, okay, I've heard vulnerability will create deeper connection in my relationships. I'm going to share something really vulnerable. And then often it's like the Wild West out there. And sometimes the response can be awful and you don't feel more connected. You feel further away. So can you speak to like the And then it's almost like someone like dusts their hands and is like, I'm never being vulnerable again, yeah. because it did not get me connection. It made me feel more disconnected. Can you speak to like the journey of experimentation with vulnerability? And like some of the questions you addressed, which I love, was like, who do I be vulnerable to? And how do I navigate this? Like, how have you journeyed in experimenting with it?
Yeah, well, I think that's a good way of looking at it and expressing it on this podcast, and even for the listeners to know that there's not really, I don't think I really know experts of vulnerability. I mean, there's definitely people that do it well, yeah. and they're well practiced in it, but I don't think anyone really has absolutely cracked it and gets it right every time, because it does involve another person. Like you said, you can share vulnerably and then actually goes horribly wrong. And that could be someone that's really safe and in your kind of circle of trust and you feel belonging with, but it still might go wrong. So I don't think we ever are going to get to the point where we do it so, so well. I think it's going to be a continual journey of learning how to lean into vulnerability, spend time being vulnerable, how to interact with vulnerability. So I think it's definitely something that we absolutely learn and have to consistently sit in the tension of, even when it goes wrong. And it kind of breaks my heart when people do try it and then they're like, right, never doing that again, because it goes wrong. So I just encourage people to have a real kindness and self-compassion towards yourself in the kind of lean into vulnerability, because it's not always going to go well. And you could do it really well, because I feel like I did it really well all those years ago, because we were in an environment, and now it's like really different living in a city. And I was just having a chat this week with my friend Ryan, and we were just saying like, gosh, it's actually so hard to maintain connection in a city, like in a busy city like London, because you're mainly just catching up with your friends every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, every 4 weeks. So then to actually do vulnerability again can be really difficult. So I think it kind of, it's peaks and troughs, like it's ups and downs with vulnerability. And I think it's okay that we don't get it completely right every time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that like vulnerability, I think a good place to kind of practice it is in your counselor's office, probably, yeah. or your therapy, you know, like it's a safe space. Yeah. Like they want you to be messy and the most honest. Yeah. Like they want you to like overshare, mm-hmm. because ultimately you're going to get to the breakthrough with that level of honesty. And so tell me a bit about like some of the payoffs of vulnerability, like that you've seen in your personal journey. Like you've mentioned some of them, like obviously deeper connection with people, but like if you even related to like connecting to God, like how vulnerability plays into that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you could speak to that.
Yeah, I think you make a good point actually of when professional help is actually really appropriate and probably a safer space too. Because when I think of my most vulnerable moments, they probably were in therapy, where I've gone to like the deepest place, because that person's literally paid and they're a professional at meeting the need, basically, which is empathy and move towards and compassion and helping you gain insight. That's what therapists are there for, to help you kind of gain insight into your into the depths of who you are. So I think in the kind of couple of years I was having psychotherapy, those moments of like, and it is so vulnerable. Like I was talking to someone today who wants to get therapy, and I was like, I obviously highly recommend it, but it's deeply vulnerable, because you're literally going to the very depths of who you are, and they're kind of holding that space for you to do that. So I think there's sometimes where it's completely appropriate, and sometimes I'll process with people and eventually I'll say, do you know what, I think you actually probably need to sit with a therapist and a professional. I think what you're trying to get in community is actually probably too much for your community to actually meet that need. So sometimes I'll advise people, I'll say, look, I can see you like trying to be vulnerable with your community, but your friends can't be your therapists. They can't be your counselors. They can't always hold that space. So I think it's kind of having a bit of self-awareness of like, okay, what are the depths that I'm going to vulnerability wise? Is it actually time to see a professional? But if not, and if there's, because there's different levels of vulnerability, it's not always just the bad stuff where we're like, I did this, I have shame in this area, or I want to open up about this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes vulnerability is like sharing a dream or deep joy about something, like that's vulnerable. So there's different levels to vulnerability. So I think it also depends on what type of vulnerability we're talking about. We sometimes just think it's the bad stuff, like I did this when I was 15 or something. But actually it's like, with your friends, like share those dreams, share those vulnerable dreams that you've never told anyone before. There's different levels of vulnerability, and kind of let them sit in that as well.
Yeah. I heard recently that the second most painful emotion to experience is embarrassment and humiliation. Yeah. And I think a big thing connected to dreams and going after dreams and why we kind of like get stopped short in pursuing that mm-hmm. is like the fear of I'm going to look stupid, you know, and I'm going to look, you know, people are going to make fun of me, or the cringe factor. Yeah. I know when I first launched the podcast and putting myself out there, I'm like, ooh, cringe. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more about like our self-protection from pain, why we, like some of the ways that we avoid being vulnerable. Yeah. Like what are some examples?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting stat about the shame the embarrassment and the humiliation. I see that actually patterned in people. They'll often share a memory that was so embarrassing or so humiliating, or you can feel them trying to avoid. And I think that was probably my experience as well. I can't think of specifics, but I can definitely... I can definitely feel that I had that kind of like, oh, shame, embarrassment, humiliation, or don't want to. So I probably couldn't tell you the memories right now, but I'm sure I've probably discussed them in my therapy. I think it's very real. And I think what that does hit on is the shame aspect of like, I am not enough, basically. So shame would say, I'm not enough, basically, you're not enough. That's what we kind of believe when we're partnering with shame. And when we believe that, we're shutting down, we're closing up shop in our heart, as it were. The walls are going up, we're disconnecting from our heart, we're numbing, all of the bad stuff, basically, that then makes vulnerability really hard, because intimacy can't get through walls and it can't get through numbing. So I think it often just links to us then feeling shame, basically, which is never fun. And I think that's the same. Maybe Brené Brown said that actually, the vulnerability is the antidote to shame, I think. I think that's what she kind of said.
Yeah, I think so.
So it is what will take you out of it. But those things, yeah, they do. They kind of trap us in that kind of shame space and that shame spiral, as it were. But that was never the plan, really. And that is where, I don't think I asked the question about God and kind of intimacy with him. Mm. That is where we're able to really be like going back to our identity and being like, God, who is it? Who is it that you say I am? Like, whose am I? Not just who I am, but whose am I? And we have a perfect father who unconditionally loves us, that we can be deeply vulnerable with. He knows all of our stuff already. So it's kind of an easy one to say, well, here it is. Yeah. Here's everything. Here's my whole heart. So for me, when I'm shutting down, I will often go to the Father first, because it is it's almost like a get out of jail card, free card. You're like, okay, I know I'm in this like numb space. Let's go to the kindest person I know, and that's the Father, just to soften up my heart. And then I can often go to a friend after that. Because there's nothing better than going to a close friend and a good friend as well. Like, if that's someone you trust, you feel safe with, you've built trust with over the years, I'd never recommend being vulnerable with someone you've just met necessarily. Yeah. But actually, there's a beauty in history, and there's a beauty in time with each other, and there's a beauty in building trust, basically, and safety.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you bring that up and like finding safe people, because I think that I know for me, moving to America, I was around a lot of safe people. Mm. So it was almost like I probably pendulum swung from like wanting to be self-protective and private to I'm oversharing everything of my life, you know. And even like I could feel, because I've learned so much about the nervous system, like the energy of like, and I'm a verbal processor, so I'll be like, blah, 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 like, you know, like, and sharing everything, which is kind of part of the journey as well. But then I also learned that sometimes our oversharing is more connected to sometimes our trauma responses too. Yeah. And I think this is like the delicate space, because even as a society, we can be so judgmental of people who are oversharing. Mm-hmm. But like I was looking into what Brené Brown talks about oversharing, like oversharing isn't necessarily vulnerability, because it's like even when we post things on Facebook and share like what are very personal things on Facebook, that's not necessarily vulnerability. She calls it floodlighting. Mm. She has this quote of saying, oversharing, not vulnerability. I call it floodlighting. It's how we protect ourselves from vulnerability. We just engage in behavior that confirms our fear, which, I mean, there's more to that quote, yeah. which I didn't actually fully go into. But I think sometimes we, because especially if we've gone through trauma, we can, like, we're needing to, like, express and offload the, discharge the pain somehow. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes, like, we are oversharing and then disappointed that people aren't responding well. Yeah. So can you speak to oversharing? Because I think, like, it's part of the learning vulnerability mm-hmm. piece, like, of us learning how to have wisdom in how we share and what we share. Can mm-hmm. you speak into that?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's always tempting to overshare because it is that quick validation, it's that quick connection. So I think what oversharing does do is get you that need met really quickly, basically, but it's not really meeting the yeah. deeper need. So I think it can always be very yeah. tempting. I've not heard it called floodlights before. That's interesting. It's so, yeah. I feel like it was a really big thing at one point, wasn't it, of people being vulnerable on social media. And it was a really bizarre thing. She'd be like, oh, wow, how fun. And you would kind of call it vulnerability thing, and it was. But I kind of look back now and think, no, that was definitely just you completely oversharing. And there isn't really actually a risk in it because no one can affect you in that moment. So they could reply to you on a DM, as it were. Yeah. But actually, they're not with you in the moment. So it's not, because vulnerability is earned, right? So you kind of, you're wanting to be affected, you're wanting to actually say I need something in the moment, you're wanting that move towards from someone. But if you're doing that on social media, you're in your room at home on your own, no one's gonna kind of affect you, as it were, because they're not there with you. So I think it can be tempting for kind of, yeah, that quick validation or that connection. But actually I think we've got to be wise with that and not just kind of, there's that verse, isn't there, don't cast pearls to swine, I think it is. Don't yeah. kind of throw pearls to the pigs. And I think there's real mm-hmm. wisdom in that. So again, it's going back to like, okay, why am I being vulnerable? I'm being vulnerable because actually I'm wanting someone to meet a deep, deep need. Oversharing isn't actually going to meet that need. It's probably going to bandage it. It's going to band-aid it or plaster it, we'd say here, put a plaster on it. Do you say plaster or band-aid in yeah. Australia? Are you American? Or
oh, we say band-aid.
You say band-aid as well, yeah. We say plaster. It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, putting a band-aid on it is not quite enough. Like God actually wants mm-hmm. to meet the need of it, as it were, like heal the wound rather than just putting a band-aid on. So yeah, yeah. I think it's yeah. a heart posture, and it's a decision in that moment of like, okay, am I going to really be vulnerable and allow someone to affect me, or am I going to get a quick need met, basically? Kind of cheap intimacy, I would call that. So there's like cheap intimacy, mm-hmm. which you can get really quickly from just doing that with anyone, because that doesn't need to be a trusted person. Yeah. You could just talk to someone down the pub and they quickly like, oh, that sounds really hard, I'm so sorry you're getting through that. And mm-hmm. it all feels good in the moment, but actually it's not really a need met.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so well put. I think I haven't even thought of it that way. Mm. It's so good, because I think even people, because I know in America, it was probably in America, I saw people like posting more honest stories mm-hmm. That probably felt like the vulnerability, like piece, mm-hmm. probably like Abby Stumble, someone yeah. we both know. Yes. I remember she started posting really honest things, but I think the process of uploading something that's really honest mm-hmm. maybe was vulnerable, but I don't think what she shared yeah. was vulnerable, because she'd actually processed through the thing that she was sharing, whether it's about, you know, her journey with sickness mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, she's actually processed that through and had her community yeah. speak into that. And then she's sharing like, hey, I'm in process with this. Mm-hmm. And the vulnerability piece is more like her showing up yeah. versus like, I'm trying to get a need met mm. of empathy and connection from me sharing this. Yeah.
Totally.
That's so cool.
Yeah, totally. I think she's yeah. a great example of that, because I always remember that as well, of before I had the framework of vulnerability and transparency. I'd be like, oh wow, that's so vulnerable, she's sharing that. But you're right, she was already well through that season. She'd already done the work. She'd already shared with people she trusted, because it's courageous, but it's also boundaried vulnerability. It's like there needs to be boundaries with vulnerability. So it would be inappropriate really to stand up on a stage or share on social media something that you do require a need almost from the kind of audience, as it were. So yeah. There's got to be discernment in sharing. There's got to be discernment in who's earned trust, who's actually built trust with you. Is that person capable of holding the truth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you are such a safe person yourself. Like, I'd love to hear, and I'm sure a lot of your community, you're probably the place that people come to confess to or be like honest about their lives. And what are some ingredients you've learned about being a safe place for people to be vulnerable to you? Like, what are your, when someone's like getting ready to tell you something, like what's happening in you to cultivate safety?
Yeah. I mean, I think when I look at other safe people, I look for people that have processed pain and that are not scared of pain and are okay with holding pain, basically. So I don't think you can really, I think the only reason I'm safe is because I've done pain, basically. I've processed pain myself. I've not ran in the opposite direction from it. Well, consistently, I have sometimes, but eventually I'm facing that pain. So I look for people that are okay with pain themselves, because if you're not okay with pain yourself, you're probably not going to be okay with other people's pain. I think it's kind of, again, discerning in the moment. I'm aware. I'm like, okay, I think they're going to share something quite vulnerable. This could be the first time they've ever shared it. This could be this could be a really big deal for them. So I'm trying to basically empathize in that moment. I'm trying to kind of observe and analyze like their eye contact or their body language. And then I'm thinking about mine as well. I'm thinking about my tone. I'm thinking, am I listening? I'm not trying to think of what to say. I'm just listening because they're not looking for a solution. And being in a relationship, in my past relationships, like having a girlfriend, this definitely helped, I think, with that. I definitely learned in my first relationship. Yeah. Okay, right. We don't need to fix each other. That's not the plan. I definitely learned that in a relationship because I think men especially, we love to fix. But actually, it's very rare when someone's opening up that they're looking for a solution. They're actually just looking for some validation. So listen without fixing, basically, because it is the worst when someone comes with a solution. You're like, I don't remember asking for a solution. So I'm listening without fixing. I'm validating, because validation just feels absolutely amazing. It really does kind of meet the need, because you're suddenly like, oh, wow, like I'm not crazy for thinking this. So I'm looking to validate. And that's even if I don't relate. And you don't want to relate too much in that moment, because it's not about you. So you're not trying to say, oh yeah, me too, and then kind of stealing the show, as it were. You're listening without making it about you. And sometimes it can be nice to be like, okay, that's me as well. But you're just discerning when that's appropriate and when that's not, because they might have more to share, basically. And then just asking questions, like follow-up questions. I rarely give advice. I don't know why. I just don't anymore, really. I think I used to give quite a lot of advice, and then I suddenly thought, why do I think I know what's best for someone else? Because even if it's like what was best for me, it might not be best for them. So I really rarely give advice. I often will just ask questions, basically, and try not to assume, basically, but I'll just ask leading questions to get them to connect to their heart. And maybe reflect back what they're saying. But I think safe people are really, really important. And I've had to learn how to do that. I've been grateful to have those people in my life. And I think I've kind of observed them over the years. And I try my best to be safe myself, basically. Yeah. But again, that's relationship with the father, right? He's the safest person I know. So time with him really helps me understand and hold space for other people. And he's the most compassionate, he's the most kind, he's the most genuine, the most authentic. So if I can reflect like a tiny part of the Father's heart in those moments, I know he would want to sit with us. I know he would want to give us eye contact. I know he would change his tone. I know he would be really caring and move towards us, not away from us. So the things I know about the Father, it's like my greatest joy to try and at least be as much like him as I possibly can be. I think that's such a gift, to be able to understand who he is and try and move like he does, basically.
Yeah, that's so good. Tell me a bit more about what validation is.
Yeah, well, I think validation, I think in our upbringing we will experience something or we will go through something, and it will kind of leave us in this cognitive dissonance of like, oh, should I have felt that? Should I have not? We're kind of in this like tension point of maybe I was the problem. Maybe I was exaggerating. Maybe it wasn't me. Maybe it was them. Maybe I was the problem. So we're often in this state of like maybe this, maybe that, or just haven't been basically at a point of clarity or insight. Validation speaks into that. Like validate when you're able to just put something out there. So you're coming out of the darkness and into the light. You're putting something in the light, basically, and someone's being like, "I see that. Like, I see that, and it's true. Like, what you were feeling was true, and I'm sorry." So it basically just attaches. I don't know what it must do in our nervous system and our body and our brains, but it does, like you said earlier, I think it just, it definitely feels brilliant to be validated, doesn't it? Because I think you've had these, you've had these doubts, you've had these moments of like, I'm just not sure whether I'm crazy. But when someone comes in and validates you, it's kind of meeting in the middle and saying like, I see you, like I see what you went through, I see what you experienced. It's that kind of move towards in the moment that actually like speaks and confirms what you probably knew all along, but no one was ever able to actually like affirm you in that moment. And those are the moments where like this is why like covering is so important and safe people are so important, that even if there is say humiliation or embarrassment, like if that was covered in the moment, you wouldn't be dealing with it 10 years later. But there's so many moments that happen in our childhood that aren't covered. Like no one was able to like father or mother in that moment and cover that moment and say, do you know what? It's okay. Like you don't need to be embarrassed about that. You're enough. You're okay.
Yeah.
If those things happen, then we wouldn't be dealing with so much 10 years later. But because there's that question mark over who you are in that moment, you do deal with it 10 years later until someone's able to validate you and be like, it's okay. I know everyone was laughing, but it's not because of your identity. Does that make sense? It's kind of like, which is so hard when you're, I mean, I'm not a parent yet, but I can't imagine what it's like when you're a parent and you see that happen. You're like, oh, quick diving, cover, like make them feel safe. Like you don't want to, does that make sense for the validation piece?
I love that you're explaining it. It's so, because I think there's people that resist validation and they're often the people that resist vulnerability because we, especially with memories and like remembering our childhood, we actually, and even scientifically, we actually don't fully remember everything. Like we have an experience, like our body has an experience and then our thoughts make up a story about what happened.
Yes.
There's like a great documentary on Netflix. Emma Stone narrates it and it's on memories.
Wow.
And they interview someone that's like, that when the Twin Towers, like the plane went into the Twin Towers in New York, they interviewed someone and said, like, what was it like when all of that was happening in New York? And she said, yeah, I could see the smoke and I saw the plane go into the building. And from her shock, like, that's how she remembered it. Mm. But then they did research and they're like, you were actually nowhere near the building when it happened.
Yeah.
Like, you weren't. And not to say that she was a liar, but then it's more like, and even she thought that she saw it. Like, it wasn't like she was, you know, a pathological liar or someone that needs to be seen as, you know, you were in the trauma, you know, right on the front lines. It's actually that our brains, like based on how our nervous system feels, makes up stories. So I love that you're talking about validation as really more attunement into like, how did you feel in that moment versus let's get into the facts. Because sometimes I think people who are unsafe with vulnerability want to meet us with logic of like, you shouldn't feel pain because of X, Y, and Z. Like, so I think I love that you're talking about validation. It actually helps bring connection, you know.
Yeah.
And but yeah, do you have anything around like compassion? I mentioned before self-compassion, which I think validation is part of, like an ingredient to self-compassion. But how do you practice self-compassion, or what is self-compassion?
I think I've said the kind of phrase move towards. I see it as that kind of the move towards, because empathy, there's kind of empathy, there's compassion. Compassion is almost the one after empathy. So you're able to like listen, but then actually move towards and want to actually reach into someone's heart and affect it. So I think with self-compassion, I think it's really important. Like people do, a lot of who I process with, there's just often a lot of critical thoughts towards ourselves. Like a lot of our thoughts will just be quite unkind sometimes. Like we'd never really speak to the people around us like we speak to ourselves. I'd always try and like say that to people if they've got quite self-critical thoughts. I'm like, would you say that to your best friend? I don't think you probably would. So self-compassion, it's inviting a kinder voice into your self-talk, into your mind. So what self-compassion looks like for me is me moving towards my heart, basically, and saying like, John, it's okay. Like, I know you said this or did this, but I want to just give you grace in that moment, and I want to meet you in that moment. And it's kind of just allowing yourself to be kind to yourself and validate yourself as well. Like, kind of validation is in the self-compassion piece as well. So I think that's really, really important to learn that. And I think in the learning of self-compassion, it's helped me be more compassionate towards others as well. Because it's like, okay, that is a really important part of interacting with our hearts. I should probably do that for other people as well. And now I've been able to do that for myself, I can absolutely kind of lean in and take that compassion towards other people. So yeah, I think the compassion is moving towards your heart, basically. It's seeing actions, it's seeing kind of consequences that have been made maybe, but still meeting yourself with love, still meeting yourself with kindness, still meeting yourself with like a kind voice. And sometimes bringing the father's voice into that and asking him as well and being like, oh, what do you think? Like, what do you think of what I just did or what I just said? And inviting his voice into it as well. So he's never far away. Like in all of this is why I love emotional health. Like the father's never far away. Jesus is never far away. Like he was the wounded one. Like Jesus was the wounded one. He knows pain. He knows vulnerability more than any of us. So in all of these tools and tricks and things that we practice, he's so involved in them, and I think it's really important to keep him involved. None of this really works without the unconditional love of the Father, because that's what we're all searching for. We're all searching for unconditional love. That's what we all really, really want. We've been created to be loved. He can do that the best, but it's amazing that we get to do that with each other as well.
It's so beautiful. I love that. I think just practically, what are some things, like, do you know, like, I'm about to ask this question, but I know that I've failed in this area with people. Like, sometimes it's like, you know, like, I've not shown up the greatest when someone's vulnerable or whatever. And I think sometimes it's like, we need to set people up for success when we're vulnerable. It's like seeing if they have capacity to talk through at that point. Yeah. Like, I think, you know, like, well, I have two questions. Is like, the first one is like, how do we set people up for success? You know, like, we see people in the comments sharing, like, on social media, like, their most personal things, or I'm struggling with this, but it's like, oh, you're not going to get that tended to and real care by putting it in a comment necessarily. But like, how do you set people up for success with vulnerability, but then also like maybe some don'ts with maybe when someone's sharing something vulnerable, like, some do's and don'ts around people sharing with us.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good to get practical. I think honestly, like increase the communication always. So I think whenever you're involving someone else, like just think about your communication and try and increase it, basically. So because even when because sometimes you'll have a need in your head, you're like, okay, I want to meet up with my friend to talk about something vulnerable, so I'm going to text them being like, do you want to meet up? And then you meet up and they don't talk about your vulnerability and they just talk about themselves the whole time, and you come away and you think, I can't believe it, can't believe they didn't ask me how I was, can't believe that they didn't let me be vulnerable. But they have no idea. They have no idea that was your need, no idea that that was your desire. You've literally just said you want to hang out, basically. And I used to do that all the time. I used to think my friends would read my mind, but they can't. So I would do that sometimes, and I'd come away from those interactions feeling so hurt and so frustrated at that person. But how would they know? So I think just a practical one on kind of friendships, when you're texting that friend to say, can we hang out, be specific. So text them saying, hey, I'd love to hang out and processing something quite hard at the moment. I'd love to just be a bit vulnerable with you, and maybe have your thoughts. is that, have you got some time? Or I will often like, or if you don't want to be that clear, just be like, I'd really love some quality time with you. Because it's quite fun. Even like just texting someone to hang out is actually a level of vulnerability, right? But then saying like, I want some quality. I'll often say that to my friends. Sometimes I'd like, just to be kind of clear, I'm like, I'd love some quality time with you. And they normally know what that means, basically. So it's kind of like naming what you actually need from your friend. And that kind of builds honest communication and opens the door for kind of deeper connection with friends. And also just puts them in a state of like, oh, okay, like John actually needs something in this moment, I better show up. Which is ideal. So I think that's a big thing, is like kind of saying very clear, like set a very clear communication with your friends, basically. And also just trying to name what you're feeling, like trying to name, like, this is what I'm actually feeling, this is what I'm experiencing, not needing you to fix me, not needing you to give me solutions, but I'd love someone just to sit with me. Like sadness is one, like sometimes I used to want to exit sadness as quick as possible because I thought sadness was wrong and I thought sadness was bad. So I used to think that sadness just needed to be reversed. Whereas now I'm like more than happy to be sad for however long I need to be sad for, basically. Not to like wallow in it, but I will often sit in sadness for a few hours or an evening or a morning, and I'm okay with that. I don't always want to do that on my own. So sometimes it could just be texting a friend and being like, feeling really sad. I'm okay with that, but can you come around and like hang out with me, basically, and not talk about anything, but just kind of be sad. And that's kind of vulnerable as well, because, but it builds trust, and it also builds like a understanding of each other, and it allows you to be known. I think what vulnerability and intimacy does breed is the ability to be known, and you can't be fully known unless you're, letting people know you and you're actually showing who you are, because there's a difference between being seen and known. Like being seen isn't going to meet that emotional intimacy, whereas being known really is. So I think it's allowing your friends to really know you and get to know you. So the next time you're sad, they will just text you and be like, oh, do you want to talk about it? Do you want to come out of that sadness, or do you want to sit in that sadness? And then also like practically with like, because I don't know how it is in Australia, but in England, compliments and kind of affirmation would never be received necessarily. But I think get really good at receiving compliments and love and affection and affirmation. Like be the best. I always say to people, be the best receivers. Like be a funnel. Like be a funnel for his love and be a funnel for people's love. Because if it's there, like take it and receive it as much as you can. Because I think naturally we will often give that to other people. But it's harder to kind of receive love. So I just tell people to be the best receivers of love, basically. Like freely we give, freely we receive.
A great point.
Be good receivers of love.
Yeah, because we can kind of move through the earth feeling like, oh, I'm not really loved, or we think that love looks like romantic love, so we feel like, oh, our needs won't get met until this specific thing happens. And it's like, oh, there's love coming at you all the time, but we just haven't learned to receive it or like been open to it. So that's such a great point. Love that.
I love it. And even just small, and even like small consistent acts as well. Like if this is the first time you're going to try, if you're a listener and you're thinking, oh, wow, I need to be vulnerable, don't feel you need to like bear it all straight away, but just actually kind of test it. I will often like, when I'm building new friendships, I'll often kind of test the water with people and be like, okay, let's see if they can handle a bit of vulnerability here, a bit of vulnerability there. I'll kind of like push the boundaries with them and see how they respond. So I think small, consistent like acts of vulnerability or acts of honesty with friends, that will build trust over time. So don't rush into vulnerability or even like depth and connection with friends. Like it can be exciting sometimes building new friendships, but you'll see that happen quite a lot sometimes, super intimacy within like 3 months, and then before you know it, they're not friends anymore because it was just too much too soon. So I think kind of build trust, build safety, build that vulnerability over time, and kind of observe how your friends handle that and if they can handle that, because it's got to be based on trust for it to feel safe.
Yeah. And I think like even you're making me think of dating, like on the first date, you don't have to share your whole like skeletons in the closet.
Yeah,
like
totally.
You, and just even knowing like you're a precious human. You deserve like some trust built in order before you share like some of your more intimate things. I think sometimes we can damage ourselves because we want to be fully honest and share everything. And it's like, actually, like your story matters and who you are matters. Mm-hmm. And you deserve to have trust built in order to share certain things in your story. And it doesn't mean that you're hiding or whatever, but it just means like, oh, you're like, you're worthy of like being set up well in the sharing of who you are, you know?
Yeah,
but good. Have you got any thoughts on that?
I think it is. I think it's, you just spoke about being worthy, and I think it is knowing your worth. So I think you're not trying to get a quick fix. You're not trying to get a quick bit of intimacy. Yep. You're actually worth, you're worth people's time. So actually the time spent, you're worth that time. So actually it's looking at the kind of long term of what this friendship could look like. And probably will look like, but knowing that you're worthy of not like a rushed relationship, and you're worthy of, again, go back to that cheap intimacy. It's not that you're looking for. You are worth having a closeness and an intimacy with people, and you are worth them doing the work and you doing the work. It's always going to be a kind of shared thing, but there's going to be sometimes when you're the one doing the work and sometimes when they're the one doing the work. But most relationships, or like healthy relationships, we're looking to do that like long term, basically. So I think definitely it's tied to our worth, it's tied to our identity, it's tied to our view of ourselves, which is why identity is important in all of this. I think vulnerability will be really hard if you don't value yourself, and you may not be able to do it as kind of well if you don't value yourself or have like a kind of high self-esteem. If you have low self-esteem, I think it's even more difficult to be vulnerable because you don't feel worthy of love in the first place.
Yeah, that's so true and such a great point. I think from like taking away from our conversation, you've brought up so many great things. And I think there's like, you know, if we engage with vulnerability as an experiment and going gently, slowly into it, and learning how to, I think I always get my students when I teach on vulnerability to think about how, what they want someone to do when they share something vulnerable. Yeah. So some people are like, I just want a hug.
Yeah.
Other people are like, get away from me. Yeah. Don't touch me. Yeah. So it's kind of learning like, what do you need? And I love that you've brought up need, which I didn't even think of, like learning, like, what are you needing from this exchange, like validation? Because even setting people up for success, like I know with my mom, I'll be like, I just need you to say that sucks, you know? And then she feels like, oh, you don't want input or whatever. You want this in this moment. And it sets her up for success versus like, mom, why are you giving me advice? Like, I don't want advice. And I'm bad because I'm an advice giver too. Yes. So it's like, we want to like, and I love that you're bringing up learning how to, just sit with people and be a powerful presence with people when they're sharing that sort of thing. But I'd love to hear any final thoughts on vulnerability in closing, like, to build a case for do it more. Or actually, I love that you did bring up like some people don't have the capacity to be a counselor. Yeah. Like some people, you know, sometimes it's you're gonna get a lot more out of vulnerability if it's in a safe kind of professional space. But final thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would just say be okay with going on the journey, like it being a journey, basically, like lean in. I love that phrase, like lean into the vulnerability, lean into the journey. Remember, we're not looking for success. We're not looking for perfection. We're not looking to reach like a goal with vulnerability. We're looking to like engage with a journey and engage with like a value system of how we view ourselves, view each other. We're basically stepping into a value system of like, okay, in order to do healthy relationship and wholehearted living, I need to do this thing called vulnerability. And yes, it's really uncomfortable. Yes, it's really risky. Yes, it doesn't always go well. But actually, in order for me to sign up to this connected life, which hopefully your listeners want, I've got to do this thing called vulnerability. So yeah, I would encourage your listeners to lean into vulnerability, lean into the journey of vulnerability. Don't expect to get it right all the time, and be okay if you don't get it right all the time. That is the reality of vulnerability. But actually build a relationship with it, get to know yourself, and don't be afraid to teach your friends. Like you just said about saying to your mum, like, I used to want people to like read my mind, but actually it's sometimes really nice to say, I just need you to validate me in this moment. And then they do that. And that's what you needed. You needed them to do it, not for them to guess that they needed mm-hmm. to do it. You actually just needed them to do that validation. So don't be afraid to actually teach your friends how to interact with your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. And it's so powerful when that exchange happens, because you're like, oh, and then you just feel so much more connected to the other person, and so much more like a load off your heart. Like, and I think that vulnerability is such an antidote to like loneliness, learning how to do that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, thank you so much for coming on. You're such a fan favorite.
Always love our conversations.
I know. And I just highly encourage all the listeners to go follow you on Instagram, because you just create so much joy on the platform. So I'll be putting your Instagram handle in the show notes. But thanks so much for coming on. It's been so fun connecting with you about this topic.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me for the third time. I appreciate the callback.
I know. So cool. Awesome. Thanks so much, Sean.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.